Welcome to another edition of The List, a Write Fiction podcast. We've got a wonderful show for you all today about our three most personally influential albums. Before we get started, if you love the pod, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your listening app. It helps us reach new listeners like you. Also, be sure to check out our companion Spotify playlist with all our picks that we mentioned in the pod. The link is in the show details. Now, let's get to it. Prince, Beyonce, Rufus Wainwright. While all singular artists, they all have at least one thing in common. That one thing is that all of them, and really any artist you hear out there, was influenced by someone else. Prince was influenced by Stevie Wonder, Beyonce influenced by Diana Ross, and Rufus Wainwright by Judy Garland. Without these influences, maybe these iconic artists wouldn't be who they are today. Now, these influences haven't defined them as artists, but have rather provided a foundation for them to explore their own particular artistic offerings to the world, and have thus influenced countless artists that came after them. As a band, the guys and I make what we think is our own brand of music, and on today's show, we're going to give you a peek behind the curtain into the artists and albums that have shaped us individually as artists, as we discuss our three most personally influential albums. And let me introduce the guys. Of course, we have Freddie Bobetti Berman.
Hello.
Nice. And then, of course, we have Brendan Taddy Meta McGeehan.
Shabbat shalom, guys.
And we got Adam, the podiatrist, Blonde Selick Zelensky.
Yes.
And of course, I'm Aaron Brown, the John Stockton of podcast, dishing out assists left and right. And before we get into the picks, guys, I just want to kind of see what you guys, how you guys are doing today, you know, what you guys been up to. I will tell you, let me say so. I'm very excited about something that happened to me this week. Is I got possibly my first gig of the year at East Market in Philly, outside. And it is just so exciting to at least feel the possibility of playing some live music for real people.
Will you remember how to do it? Are you going to remember?
No, man. I do not know how it works. I'm sure this will bomb. Horrible.
Like the mic stand dropping constantly type of thing.
Exactly.
The feedback all the time, just like whenever you go up to the mic.
Yeah, I got to check all my equipment. I don't even know if all my equipment works. I don't even know where all my equipment is. Maybe it's at your house, Adam.
I have your speakers.
Know.
Yeah, I have both of your speakers. You might want them. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, see, I didn't even know where my stuff is. Oh, that's good to know.
If you don't know where it is, I probably have it. That's probably usually a good rule of thumb.
So how about you guys, man? What do you guys been up to? Brendan, I hear you have some interesting updates in your life. What are you doing, buddy?
Well, sure. Yeah, I'm in the middle of several projects right now, which I guess is fairly common for me, but I'm wrapping up an album for an artist that I'm producing. I'm starting two others with two new artists. I'm going to be knee deep in opera for the next 2 weeks, mixing an opera for this university. And I just got a gig with the Phillies, so that'll be starting as the weather warms up.
Wow, starting second baseman.
That's right.
Second baseman.
Yeah, gold glove. Here I come.
I'm surprised you knew what that sports ball.
I heard someone say that once.
You can't play with a gold glove. You can't get none.
It seems like that would be difficult. Yeah, it's like Robbie Robertson playing that gig, the last waltz, with the gold guitar, and he's just like hurting so much by the end.
They might as well just pantomime that whole thing because they ended up overdubbing so much anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Well, how about you? How about you, Freddie? You doing anything, man? You got some gigs lined up? You know, what's going on in your world?
No gigs, but I've actually been doing some sessions from home. now that I've discovered that I can record with my little electronic kit.
Nice.
Through my computer, I've been doing sessions for other people, so that's kind of cool, and I'm about to make a big upgrade into the Logic world.
Nice.
So wish me luck on that. Other than that, just practicing and, you know.
Nice. Good luck, Freddie.
Wait until it's safe.
Nice. I've had Logic for, man, like a couple months now, and I can't figure it out at all. I'm still working on Reason, but
we know who to go to.
I love these program names because I don't. I'm not much for Reason or for Logic. but I work with Reaper, so I don't know what that means. That's not quite as funny as the other two, but
it's not. Funny. Adam, do you got anything going on with you, man?
Just my huge pumping up. You know, I've been still my writing had a good clip. Since COVID started, I've gone through 32 songs, so I've got a lot going, and mostly spring cleaning.
Nice.
You know, taxes, mail, housework, you know, yard work now that it's warmer. It's, you know, it's mundane, suburban family life for me. But that gig thing sounds exciting. I might, now that's warming up, there might be some gigging opportunities that I'm looking at as well, just to, you know, remember how to do it again, muscle memory it back.
Yeah, nice.
I got all this great gear.
yeah, that's what the pandemic has left us. Tons of great gear and no way to use them. But
yeah.
Let's get to the list, guys. What do you think?
Right on.
I'm ready.
All
right. Let's go to you, Adam. So we're talking about here are, you know, three most personally influential albums. So Adam, let's give us your 3-2-1, buddy.
All right, my 3-2-1. Yeah, and I won't get in. I will go in depth later because, you know, there's very, you know, specific reasons for all of these. But you'll see a common thread among my choices are right when I started getting into the guitar in the mid-90s. All of my three picks and my honorable mentions are kind of, you know, all have a big reason of why I believe what I like and like what I believe today. And with no further ado, my number third from 2001 is Wilco's Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. Number two from 1996 is Phish's Billy Breathes. And my number one from the illustrious year of 1997 is New Hope's own Ween's The Mollusk.
Interesting. Says a lot about you, sir.
You know all this already. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Just, you know, for our New Zealand listeners out there.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Was it Aaron? Is that good to meet you? I'm glad to be on the pod.
Freddie, what is your top three, buddy?
First of all, I want to say real quickly, I love how all the nicknames are expanding and just like taking a life of their own. I mean, you feel free to call me Fred, Fetty, Bo Betty, Freud.
Freudy Berman. Today, yeah.
Yeah, Freudy. You just feel free to keep padding the list, okay?
Nice, all right. Nice.
Okay, so my number three pick, and I just realized my number three is kind of a tie. It's the Temptations, 1965, and it's also the Temptations Sing Smokey. Mm. Those records came out kind of in the same year, but I picked Tempting Temptation because that's really a Temptations album as opposed to a Smokey Robinson album with the Temptations singing all the songs. Number two, 1967, James Marshall Hendrix, the Jimi Hendrix Experience, Are You Experienced? Wow, mind-blowing. And number one, The Beatles, Rubber Soul, 1965. For me, the game changer for everyone, everything. And we'll get into details later. Those are my number three.
Yeah, I got to say, again, they fit you well, sir.
Thank you.
It's just like, I feel like, okay, I see these picks and I'm like, oh, that's Freddie. Yeah. On to the next person who just comes up with like all these interesting things, man. That's why he's Brendan Meta Patty McGeehan. What's your top three most personally influential albums?
Oh man, I feel like when you say interesting, it's code word for I'm a nice guy.
No.
Okay.
Only two of them are nice. Only one of them is nice guy.
I know which one exactly. So my number three, if you can hear in your head the voice of Conan O'Brien and Andy Richter singing in the year 2000, I went with Radiohead's Kid A. That's my number three. My number two took a turn. In 2010, the minimalist composer Steve Reich put out a record of his compositions called Double Sextet / 2x5. That's my number two. And then my number one, personally most influential album, Miss Joni Mitchell, The Queen, 1976, Hejira, number one.
Nice, man. Oh, that Joni Mitchell record is, oh, it's, what's up, Freddie?
I just have to interject real quick. I would be remiss. The year 2000 is sung by my good friend, La Bamba.
Oh, you're so right. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. He's my good buddy. Family friend, Richie La Bamba Rosenberg. Have to give credit where credit is due.
Totally. Iconic.
Next.
All right. I guess it's me here. This is Aaron Brown, the John Stockton of this podcast. I'm going to give you my top three, personally influential, most personally influential albums. And starting at, this was very hard, very, very, very hard. And starting at number three, I'm going to go with, I'm going to do a little cop out here. I'm going to go with the Donny Hathaway Collection, which was released in 1990. And it's, a compilation of, a bunch of Donny Hathaway songs, including, everyone knows the This Christmas. And so that's my number three. And my number two is, which is probably, many people's number two out there, is Purple Rain by
everybody's number
Prince.
Two. I just that's great. Put that on a shirt.
1984. There's a movie attached to that if anybody doesn't know that. And then my number one is maybe the best Stevie Wonder album ever made, 1972's Music of My Mind, Stevie Wonder. And so those are my, top three most personally influential albums. And with that, we're going to take a short break and be back with tons and tons of discussion, especially on that Steve Reich pick. Hold on, we'll be back. And we are back. And guys, great picks on a list. We were talking about how like our lists really reflect us. One of the picks on our list, I feel like I know you, Brendan, but that number two pick of yours, I'm like, who is this dude? So explain yourself, sir.
Okay. Well, I had a couple of reasons for putting this on my list. Generally, this is a Herculean task that we've been asked to do, but I think for me, what I tried to do with each of my picks was like pick an album from different phases of my life and career so far. And so the way that this Steve Reich record fits in for me was like, for me, minimalism has always been interesting ever since like high school. My high school band director turned me on to Philip Glass. And I always thought it was really cool. And I always thought there was like a thread between minimalism and like rock music with the repetitive nature of it and the highly rhythmic stuff. And when this album came out, it was so cool because Steve Reich just totally tore down the wall for me of this barrier between like classical and non-classical worlds, because he's writing the 2x5 is for two like rock instrumentation quintets to play off each other. And then he has a piece called Electric Counterpoint that was written for Pat Metheny. And also Johnny Greenwood played that piece. Like he doesn't see these boundaries at all. And so it was so refreshing to like get into his music and to understand that it's just music. No matter what, there are no boundaries. It doesn't matter. If it's good, it's good. If it sucks, it sucks. And he has shown me that and has helped me with that. But also, I was doing it to troll Aaron because I know that he hates minimalism.
That is very, very true. But like, let me ask you, let me go a little deeper into that pick, into your kind of writing and composing and stuff. You know, where does that kind of show up in your work?
I've always loved the way that riffs interplay. And so maybe it's because I'm a bass player. I just love a good riff. And minimalism to me is like all riffs all the time. And like the way that they morph and play with each other and the way the rhythm changes. So I've always had a real interest in that. And it does show up on my writing, I think, because I do like repetitive music and I do like things that just like ostinato patterns that kind of just unfold.
What's an ostinato pattern?
It's just a riff. It's a fancy word for a riff.
That's why he's meta, ladies and gentlemen. That's why he is meta. All right, you know, let me go to, you know, a guy. Freddie, what do you got, man? Sorry.
Just for Brendan. So Steve Reich, is it Reich? Reich?
I think it's Reich.
I like Reich.
Didn't he do a composition just for drumming?
Yes. So that was the one that, like, kind of put him on the map.
Right.
It was called Music for 18 Musicians, and he wrote that, I think it's from the 70s, like kind of like the heyday of minimalism. And it's only for like percussion instruments and clapping and things like that. And it's all just polyrhythms. And so when you take away pitch from it, it's really interesting.
I listened to that once. It was very interesting. And one more thing, that, do you know about the guy who recorded this thing? I am sitting in a room and he just said this one line over and over again and re-recorded it through microphones. I forget what it's called.
That doesn't ring a bell. Kind of sounds like a John Cage thing.
It's really interesting. I'll send you a link to it afterwards.
Okay.
I forget
thanks.
What it's called, yeah. But it's crazy.
Yeah, you can miss me on that one, though, buddy. I will say though, Brendan, I was being a little facetious, I guess, because I'll be honest with you, I did like it a tiny bit.
Ooh.
I did like it a tiny bit.
Okay.
Inch by inch, meta. Get them inch by inch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inch, I think it's starting to seep in like a tiny bit. Yeah, it is. But here's another kind of confession that I have. And I'm gonna go to you, Mr. Blonde Selick. This confession is fish, man. Billy Breeze. It was kind of fantastic. The vocals are the worst ever.
Well, you'll never like the vocals. That's
terrible.
Right. Yeah.
But even some of the harmonies were wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the music, it was really fantastic, man. Tell me about like this and kind of how this came to be on your top three at your number two spot.
Well, it's no secret that I like fish a little bit, and I've seen them a couple of times. But why this made the list is just a quick rewind here. Is back in like when I was in Spanish class in ninth grade, an old acquaintance of mine would give me fish tapes. Like, you know, this is back before burnt CDs, you know, in the mid 90s and all that. So I would get tapes from like shows and like, you know, bootleg shows from like 91, 92. And it was just fun. Like, you know, like, and fish from, and then that time was like very zany, quirky, kind of like a lot of, you know, very dense arrangements and everything. And I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. And then, you know, I finally started, you know, I think I got a CD for Christmas or something, or something like Billy Breeze. I got Billy Breeze and I put it on. And it's kind of like your reaction. I'm like, oh, there's some like nice songs in here. Steve Lillywhite produced it. It's like a nice, you know, Fish isn't known for their studio albums, but this one is kind of got like just nice, you know, they're not trying to recreate the live show. They're just kind of nice arrangements. And then that's kind of like when a light bulb went off for me, like, oh, wow, look at this. They're like, you know, they can do the quirky thing and they can actually, you know, play some nice, you know, tasteful songs. They there's more dimension to them. And that's why I had, you know, this had a big impact on me. And, you know, I still, you know, I cop a lot of Trey riffs playing today, but this album really like made it fully click for me.
Yeah. And I actually do hear a lot of the kind of songwriting kind of structure and stuff in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like, it's so evident, at least to me.
Probably to others as well.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Bo Betty, Fruity.
Yes, sir.
You got to tell me a little bit about why your number one was Rubber Soul. Like, what's what makes that of all the Beatles albums?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have to realize in 1965, a lot of things were still single oriented. 45 singles, song, you know, one or two songs. And, you know, the Beatles, you know, let's see, Help was before that. There was a soundtrack to a movie. But basically, a lot of bands, except for maybe Dylan, were still doing, you know, they're like still doing a lot of covers and filler. And Help was the first album. I mean, Rubber Soul, to me, was the first album where it's like a whole album. It's not a concept record, but it was like every song, top to bottom. And it was different. It was like a combination of folk, R&B, country. It was all their influences had crystallized, had distilled. To me, this is the moment where the Beatles really broke away from being the Fab Four and morphed into something new, something no one had ever seen before or heard.
Yeah.
That's why it's so groundbreaking.
Adam, what do you got?
I mean, I'm a big Rubber Soul fan as well. I think Brian Wilson, nods to Rubber Soul quite a bit, kind of inspired him for Pet Sounds, which begets Sgt.
And vice versa, yeah.
It was kind of that, but I think also Rubber Soul has the most sadistic Beatles song of all time on it as well. And that would be
what, Run for Your Life?
Yeah. God, you just, those lyrics are just insane.
What a great song.
Oh yeah, it's great, but God, I really, you know, it's a bit of a hang up of mine. I'm just like, you know, I'd rather you be dead, little girl, than to be with another man. You're like, wow, this is like
John, man.
But like what, he just shakes his mop top and everyone's like, oh, okay, yeah. Once you're dead, you know, better not leave or I'll kill you. Yeah.
Well, this is like I said, this is where they're making a break from that whole mop top. Or they're writing about deeper things, you know.
But I mean, that's how it kind of got away. I mean, if someone would write that now,
right?
It also shows you can say almost anything if your melody is strong enough.
Yeah, that's probably the bigger point. You're right.
that is.
So that yeah. I mean, look, one of the things that I thought about with this assignment was, what are albums that you just sat in front of the stereo and played a lot? Like when you got home from the record store, you put that record on and you put it on repeat. So for me, this is one of the first albums where that happened.
That you just kept playing and playing and playing.
Exactly.
And it was a big pivot. Uh-huh. It was a big pivot for the Beatles big time. And I just another really quick aside while we're, you know, we don't really talk a lot about it. Beatles, so it's like, but I had a kind of a unique education with the Beatles is that in my sixth grade music class, we spent an entire semester on just the Beatles, and it was cool. Just, you know, in hindsight, just what a cool thing.
Very cool.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, what do you got, man?
Well, I just wanted to point out that it appears to be across the board, either our number ones or our number twos were pretty big sea changes across all of our picks. Like, I know Billy Breathes was a big sea change for Fish. I know. So Freddie, you just told us why Rubber Soul was. For me, Joni Mitchell, Hajira was like a big departure for her. And the Music in My Mind, wasn't that marking like the beginning of the classic period, the Stevie classic period?
Well,
kinda.
I mean, yeah. I mean, people like to say, I don't like to say that. But people like to say that. I think the one before him really was his big departure. I forgot what it was called, but that album right before Music of My Mind. I
mean, okay, since we're on Music
speaking,
of My Mind.
Where I'm coming from?
Yeah, where I'm coming from, yes.
Yeah.
Well, while we have you, Aaron, I know, I mean, God, we did an Intervisions tribute show, me and you. I know you cite Talking Book all the time. And I kind of know. A little bit why you like Music in My Mind, but please elaborate why you chose that over all of the other great Stevies.
That's a good question, because that this one was very, very, very difficult for me personally. I just started thinking, so the songs on Talking Book are stronger. The songs maybe on Inner Visions maybe are stronger. But I just keep going back to, you know, Music of My Mind, and like, you know, just I love singing. It's like raw. It's like raw form than those other ones. It's not as polished. And then there's Superwoman on there.
Love it.
You almost can't beat Superwoman.
Oh, man, what a song.
Yeah. And I mean, these songs are just kind of like a little weirder, but they're still like that format of the Stevie thing for me. Yeah.
And maybe not the the radio oversaturation factor with them either.
Yeah. 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 I mean, part of why I don't like Talkie Book as much is I never listen to Superstition ever. Ever, 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 ever. Did I say ever? Ever.
Do you ever listen to it?
Never.
Because it got played too much, you think?
I just hear it and I'm like, this is not nearly one of the better songs on the album for me. I mean,
it's pretty
on that
funky
album.
And would the same hold true for You Are the Sunshine of My Love?
No, then that song, I can listen to that song any time of day, all times of day.
Interesting.
That song is killer. It's just a Superstition. It's just like a throwaway song. It's like, we need one more song for the album.
You know, he wrote that for Jeff Beck, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he should have just let him have it.
Well, he did. But then his label said, what are you, crazy? You must record that.
Yeah.
So,
maybe Beck, he did it for the rest. Maybe that's why I don't like it. I feel the chains of the man on him in that recording.
Yep.
I'm sure it didn't make him any money. I'm sure he made no money off of it.
He donated it.
Well, off of either version.
He donated it out of spite.
But then Jeff Beck played guitar on, Looking for Another Pure Love. So,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
You rub my back, I rub yours, you know?
Yeah. I'd like not to rub either one of their backs.
And Jeff Beck also recorded, what was the other Stevie song he recorded?
Oh, Because We've Ended Now as Lovers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's that album, Freddie, I remember Blow by Blow, that you do not like. I remember that.
It's not that I don't like it. It's like that period, you know, the big Jeff Beck fusion period is not my favorite period of his.
Right. Gotcha.
That's all.
But let's go back to our lists here, guys. Because we were kind of talking about how, like, we chose our picks and stuff, and, like, what, you know, I know Freddie kind of gave his kind of insight into that, but Adam and Brendan, like, what was it hard? I mean, like, what? How did you kind of define how you picked these? Let's go to you, Adam.
All right. Yeah. Well, mine's in. My all five of my picks kind of lie between the years 1994 and 2001. And that's because when I took piano lessons and sax lessons, but I had kind of started playing guitar there in about 94. And you know, then and you're, you know, right when you're starting to play, you're very, you know, influenced by what's around you, and it really shapes you right there at the beginning. And you know, I mean, I did, like, you know, I did learn my Zeppelin and my, you know, my Beatles and stuff, but you know, as a you know, a 13-year-old kid, I kind of liked what was going on at the time. You want to think, you know, you're immersed in something cool at the time. And so, yeah, I mean, each one of my, you know, my three choices and my two honorable mentions are, you know, still have a lasting impact on, like, how I approach music today. So that's kind of how I looked at it.
And let me just also kind of just follow up, and like, so there were a couple other albums that were huge, or, you know, back then, like OK Computer, or that's really the only one I could think of. I'm sure there was other ones.
I mean, it was hard to narrow down.
How come you didn't pick any one of those? Like, I guess that's the question. Like, how come you didn't pick, like, what, Blind Lemon or whatever?
Blind Melon?
Yeah, Blind Lemons.
Blind Lemon Jefferson?
Pledge.
I like, there can only be five, and you had to kind of, you know, or three. There can only be three, and then I added the two more. We'll get to a little later. But, I picked what I picked because you had to pick.
Yeah. Well, I do want to follow up on one more thing from you, man. Mm-hmm. That Wilco album, man. Like, what do you take from that? As like, when it hits you, like, what do you take from it?
Oh, okay.
And I'll set it up also, because when I listen to that album, I just kind of think it's kind of like subdued, and it's like it's just noisy. It has a lot of noises in it. So what do you take from it?
Okay. Well, a quick aside is that Yankee Hotel Foxtrot was actually rejected by the label, and then it ended up being like kind of their most. It's for most Wilco fans, not you, Aaron, but most Wilco fans think it's their finest work. But what I get from it is that I've always been kind of a country guy, you know, growing up in the sticks, playing the country, liking the country, and I mean, an early Wilco, I mean, you know, because of Jeff Tweedy Beget from Uncle Tupelo with Jay Farrar, and kind of the earlier Wilco was still very. You know, they call it alt country, but it's mostly just kind of, it's mostly country, you know, with a little Woody Guthrie edge. But with Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, it kind of like, it's like country plus. It kind of expanded stylistically. It's interesting you bring up OK Computer, because it kind of has that OK Computer-ish ambience to it, and still like the country folkish aspect of it. And I'm like, oh, it's kind of, to me, I'm sure, you know, this might get ripped apart, but it's kind of like how like Graham Parsons kind of started pushing the envelope with country plus cosmic American music, as he'd call it. And I think this was kind of another like extension of that country plus with
I can see that.
Yankee Hotel. Yeah. So that's
I can
kind
see
of
that. But also, I know you're a big Nels Klein guy. Mm-hmm. So how come those better albums didn't?
Well, I mean, I can only. I can only ingest things by the chronology they come out, especially when I'm doing it in the moment. I mean, Blue Sky is fantastic, and that was only a couple albums later. But you know, I mean, this one was first, and you know, and
yeah,
and
I guess
at an impressionable
whatever gets
age,
there first, yeah, whatever you know, gets
when,
there first.
When I'm catching the albums in real time, it's you know,
yeah, that's true. That's a good point, Brendan. Come on, man. Like, how did you narrow this down for yourself, these picks? And I, one thing I will say also, I mean, you're very surprising, dude. But how did Joni Mitchell hit your top spot there?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you my thinking, because initially, I think any of us could have gone 100 different ways with how we picked these. But also, as I was thinking about it more, I was like, well, every show we do is kind of our top three influential, whatever the topic is, because if we like those picks, they've influenced us in some way. So then I tried to just make more parameters on myself just so I could narrow it down. And what rose to the top were these three albums, because they changed me and they tore down musical barriers for me. They just like kind of blew my mind in different ways. And so like the first, so my number three, Kid A, came out when I was in high school. And it was like, wow, this like super popular band just made the weirdest record I have ever heard. And it's like enormous. Like, I remember that was the first Rolling Stone issue I've ever read. And they were, everyone's mind was blown. And I couldn't stop listening to it. I had it on repeat in my car. And then my number two, I mentioned earlier, like Steve Reich just totally tore down any preconceived notion I had of genre barriers and instrumentation and just like cruising between different worlds. And then my number one, so easily my number one could have been the Jaco Pastorius self-titled, and it's a tour de force of the bass. I heard that for the first time and I was like, I can't even believe I play the same instrument as what I'm hearing. And so, but then I was thinking about it more, because then hearing that record, I was like, well, I don't think I could ever do that. Plus I like playing like with people. I like playing with like songwriters. And then I found out he played with Joni Mitchell, and it like opened up my world of like how you can accompany a singer-songwriter, even though that is so reductive to even call Joni Mitchell just a singer-songwriter. But it was just so cool to like hear the interaction of like highly creative, just super out there bass guitar stylings with these like gorgeous songs. And so like that's clearly my number one.
That makes total sense.
Knew it had to be Jaco. I knew it had to be Jaco.
Well, I came for Jaco, but I stayed for Joni.
Ah, there you go.
Freddie, what do you got?
Well, I have a question for you, Aaron. So, you know, this Donny Hathaway collection came out in 90. Well, you must have been aware of him before then. How did you get turned on to Donny Hathaway? Was his music played around the house? How are you aware of him?
No, actually, I was not aware of him until I actually put the CD in the CD player, and he started playing. And I was like, "What is this?" So my dad had a whole bunch of CDs,
right?
And at the get this, guys, at the time he would always be playing like Pat Metheny or Weather Report, and I
cool. Oh, that
I could
that's
not
awesome.
Stand it. I thought it was like the worst thing ever.
Of course.
But he had this whole big CD case or whatever.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't play anything else. But this, it was just like those two records. But he was like, oh yeah, take them. Let's see, whatever, you know, listen to it. And so I just listened to everything he had. And then, you know, that Donny Hathaway album was in there, and it blew my mind. And then
what year was this? 91.
It might have been 1990. I mean,
gotcha. I got
really.
I was just curious about that.
Really. And then, you know, actually for all my picks, you know, the reason why I picked them is because I'm a singer, I guess, at the base of what I do. I only write songs so I can sing them. That's it. That's the only reason why I started writing songs.
Okay.
Just so I could sing. Because I couldn't hit all the notes that Stevie Wonder could sing. I couldn't, you know, hit all the notes that Donny Hathaway could sing. Or, you know, I could hit most of the notes of Prince, but not the falsetto. And so that's why I became a singer. So I was listening to these guys and trying to copy him. And so that's why they made my list. Adam, what do you got?
Did your dad get those CDs from the Columbia House deal? Where you get
he might have. Yeah. Might have. Freddie, what do you got, man?
Well, I just want to give a little chronology or just a little background about all of my picks because they're kind of related in a way.
Sure.
So the guys in my neighborhood, my friends' older brothers, because I don't have any older siblings, they were all into Motown and James Brown. Like, they used to go to the Uptown Theater all the time, which is like the Philadelphia version of the Apollo on Broad Street. And they used to see these acts, and that's all they listened to. So when I was a kid, I listened to what they listened to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that Temptations album, that is the first album that I bought.
Hmm.
That I owned, that was in my collection, that I listened to on my parents' console, which I still have downstairs.
Wow, nice.
Over and over and over again. The second album I bought that I listened to over and... Oh, so chronologically, I had already been listening to Motown since I was a little kid because of my friend's older brothers. Then the Beatles appeared on Ed Sullivan, and it was like, it's like The Wizard of Oz, where it goes from black and white to Technicolor. I was like, what the heck is this?
You saw it?
Yeah, that's the reason I play drums, man.
Well, but I mean, like when it happened, the moment it happened, you saw it.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so
cool.
I saw it in my grandparents' parlor in South Philly.
Wow.
And I said, I declared to my parents, I want to do that. Pointed to Ringo, I said, I want to do that.
What would they say back to you?
My dad said, hey, how about the violin?
Did they say, hey, sit down, we're watching.
Then he said, well, what about trumpet? I was like, nope. And then, you know, I got the practice pad, you know, and doesn't make as much noise. Anyway, so the Rubber Soul was the second album I bought, where I just played it over and over and over again. Then one day I went with my dad was a car salesman. I don't mean to bogart this conversation.
Nah, man.
Well, no, I'm glued
this is very,
to this.
This is very important. My dad was a car salesman, and they had all these incentives. They had these contests. You sell X amount of cars, you win an 8-track player, okay? So, summer of 1967, I'm like, how old was I? 11 years old. Go to a friend of his house, fellow car salesman, who had won an 8-track player. They gave him 2 8-tracks. They gave him a Frank Sinatra 8-track and another 8-track with this funny looking fisheye lens psychedelic picture, Jimi Hendrix Experience. And mind you, they're both on Reprise Records, which Frank Sinatra owned. It was a division of Warner Brothers.
Wow.
So we're over there, we're having a barbecue. And they're like, hey, Freddie, go up into the spare room. There's this really cool thing called an 8-track player, and there's some music, because they knew I was into music. So I'm looking, there's a Frank Sinatra 8-track, and there's a new guy, Jimi Hendrix. I was like, Sinatra, whatever, I could hear that at home anytime. I popped the Hendrix 8-track in. Man, I was tripping. I was 11 years old, but I was tripping. I was tripping hard. I was like, what the F is this music?
Yeah.
So those three albums, and then I went out and bought the album on vinyl. These three albums really had a strong effect on who I became as a musician. I just had to relay that story.
Awesome.
I do got one follow-up. And so you're sitting there watching the Ed Sullivan Show, and all the guys are doing their thing, and they're mopping their hairs back
and forth.
And the girls
are going crazy.
Girls are going crazy.
Nuts.
For probably the three guys in front. Now, what makes you want to be the guy in the back?
I look like more fun playing
in the
drums.
Back?
It looked like he was having more fun. You ever see the look on Ringo's face while he's playing, man?
I guess
grinning
that's true.
Like that. Come on.
He's like, we are getting paid.
Exactly. He's like, I don't care who the girls like more. Come on.
He's like, way to go. Good song, John. Hey, nice.
Yeah. Keep writing them songs, John and Paul. And George, you can get in there too.
Yeah, George, you're cool too. Whatever, man.
Yeah, exactly.
My bank account number is XYZ.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. We're going to take another short break, actually, and be back with our little closing segments. We're going to give you guys some honorable mentions when we come back. Hold on. Yep, we're back, guys. And before we get out of here, guys, I want to give everyone out there kind of a little extra for before we leave. Give them their honorable mentions. As we were kind of talking earlier, you know, these picks were so hard to narrow down just to three. I mean, like it could have been so many albums. I mean, really. I mean, the fact, Freddie, that you didn't pick Temptations in a Mellow Mood, I don't know. I don't even know how you did that. Like,
That was after the fact.
I don't even know how that's even
possible. I
know
how much you love that album, too.
You know? Or even really you, Brendan, with the, you know, OK Computer, really. Like, how does it even happen? Like,
It was easy for me. That's why I picked the topic.
Right. But let's stay with you, Freddie, man. Give the people a couple of honorable mentions. Yeah.
Okay. Two of them. Actually, Rolling Stones, Let It Bleed, that and Who's Next for me were kind of neck and neck. I wore both of those records out, playing along to them.
Mm.
And then later on, I fell in with some older guys that were really into the jazz world. And I was still young. I mean, I wasn't even driving yet, but I was playing in a band with these guys. And I used to either hitchhike to rehearsal or my dad drove me. And the one guy turned me on the Giant Steps, John Coltrane. Mm. And that opened up a whole nother part of my head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
And, so that, I'm not meaning that album. God, what can I say? You know, John Coltrane, Giant Steps. If you don't know it, you need to.
Yeah. Those are excellent honorable mentions, sir. Hey, Brandon, let's go to you, man. Give the people a couple of your honorable mentions there.
Yeah, I picked one of my honorable mentions. I went with Steely Dan's Asia, and it's that one was really important as an influence on me in terms of like record making, because it was presented to me early on in my like audio engineering production life when I'm learning stuff that like it's up there as like a gold standard. for just the way records are made. It's one of the cleanest sounding records ever. And so even if you don't love it musically, which I do, I like it. I like the music. Just the sonics of it are just out of this world good. So I put it on there as a personal influential one. And then my other honorable mention was I'm more of an Intervisions kind of guy, Aaron. That's the Stevie record that I always come back to. And I have that on vinyl. And I think I have two copies because they both skip in different places. So I have to kind of average them out. And that, yeah, that one just for me, like the songs are just amazing. And I think it plays top to bottom beautifully.
Yeah. I mean, Intervisions is cool. It's okay. But that Asia album, that was actually one of mine where I was like, oh, how do I fit this into this three? But I just couldn't squeeze it. Like, as much as I love the music, their voices suck. So with that, I'm going to go to you, Adam, man. What are your honorable mentions, buddy?
And real quick, just because we didn't talk about my number one pick, Ween, the Mollusk.
That's my fault, man.
No, that's fine. That's fine. And we're going to talk about Ween a lot more. I mean, I've talked about Ween before, and like it's weird. My hometown has a weird infatuation with them. Every it's interesting. Like, doesn't matter what clique or gang you're in, and up in there, like that you liked Ween. It was interesting. But the Mollusk was
Did the cliques fight the gangs?
No, we all just partied together.
Nice.
There was only like that many people in town, so if you wanted to have a keg, you'd have to kind of be friends with everybody.
Nice.
That's all there's. Yeah, out on the street, on the woods, on the roads, we would have parties in the roads.
Nice.
Because there was like nobody around. But you know, Ween will always be back in conversation. They're always a big part of my life. But with my two honorable mentions, firstly, I did Pavement's Wowie Zowie. I am a longtime Steve Malcolmus fan, but this was the one where it kind of clicked for me. It's like that sarcastic wit, and it's just very kind of weird and creative, and there's still some catchy spots in it. It's just all over the place. And I you know, as a teenager, checking out new types of inspiration, I like the weird stuff. And then I would be remiss if I did not add Nirvana's Unplugged in New York circa 94 as no matter where I end up with the guitar, in the grand scheme of things, Kurt Cobain is the reason I started playing. And I might not listen to a ton of Nirvana today. The Unplugged record is really, this is of all the MTV Unplugs from that era, this is the only one that is kind of unique and holds up for me at least. I mean, it's so strange because it's like all those Unplugs were just like spewing the hits, but Cobain like gets the Meat Puppets to do three of their songs. He does a Bowie cover. He does a Lead Belly cover. It's just like, he just like thumbing his nose at the establishment right until the end. And Kurt is why I started playing, so I had to throw him in there.
Nice. Very cool picks, man.
Yeah, man.
Very cool picks. I'm going to give you my honorable mentions here.
Yes, please.
And one of my honorable mentions was the Nels Klein version of Wilco with Sky Blue Sky in coming out in 2007. It just kind of gave me I feel like I can write this stuff. That's what it made me feel like, hey,
right on.
I could do this. I mean, I can't play guitar like that or whatever, but I was like, you
nope,
know,
not
I,
many can.
I have these kinds of sensibilities, and so it's not like I'm them or them, we're doing what they do, but like it's like, oh, I understand that sensibility. And then the other one was the anthology from the Beatles, I kind of futzed around this where there was a store in Greenwich Village, in New York. And this record store, and they had all these like bootlegs, and so it was all these Beatles bootlegs, and a lot of them ended up on this anthology. That's kind of hard to put there, but when I bought those bootlegs, I realized, you know what, these songs and these guys, they're just like regular people. A lot of them aren't even that good, but it's just like you put them in a studio and then like you give them time to work things out, and you put a guy like George Martin there that knows about music and knows about recording and kind of like can shape things for you. And it's like, wait, you can make something that's like just interesting and then have somebody else kind of help you make it sound like really interesting. And that's kind of what I took from that one.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of that. And I'm going to kick it back to you, Adam. What's kind of your closing thoughts here, buddy?
I'll put the bow on this chapter.
What do you got, Blonde Selick? The podiatrist.
Adam P.I.
uh,
if I, yeah, in thinking about this, you know, we're talking about the stuff that influenced us way early on. And really, if you, you know, if you look back from the time you started liking music until now, especially in our younger years, there was certainly a series of missteps and things you can't believe you liked. You know what I mean? There's a lot of those. You're just like, how in the frick did I like, my God, why did I waste all my time with, you know, whatever band? I'm not going to do any mudslinging now. But
Len, Steal My Sunshine. I loved them, and I have no idea why. It's a terrible choice.
Well, I'm glad you didn't pick them. But it's interesting what cream rose to the top from all that, because it's like my choices, the five I picked, I'm like, I like them almost just as much as I did back then, and it's still pretty crazy how things can hold up like that. I haven't listened to Billy Breathe in forever, because you know most Fish fans just listen to live stuff, and I'm like, wow, I still really like this, and it's interesting how so many years later, like, your influential things are still your influential things. And, and that some stuff you were listening to at the same time is like gone forever. That is, it's just kind of, an interesting thing to think on, I think.
Yeah. I go back to mine and I find new things all the time, actually, especially the Stevie stuff. And I mean, on Print stuff and just like the arrangements, like as I learn about music, I go back. And like, I'm like, oh, I didn't realize this, what was happening at this point in time here and there. And that's always very exciting for me as well. You guys, Freddie and Brenda, you guys got any thoughts?
No, I enjoyed this podcast. And like I said, during one of the breaks, this really is representative of who we all are as musicians and individuals. And yeah. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. What do you got, Patty?
Well, coming at it from a different end, I, in all honesty, was not looking forward to this episode all that much, because I was like, all right, I get to hear Aaron talk about Prince some more. I get to hear Freddie talk about the Beatles some more. I get to hear Adam talk about Fish some more. And like, nobody's picks were surprising, but having gone through it now, I actually really enjoyed hearing everybody's journeys to get to where these picks landed. And so I learned more about you guys. So it was really cool.
Likewise.
I'm sorry.
Nice.
There you go.
And with that, guys, we're gonna call it there. So on behalf of Freddie, Bobetti, Freudie, Adam the podiatrist, Zelensky / Blonselic, and Brendan Patty Meta McGinn, I'm Aaron Brown, the John Stockton of this podcast. And this is the List of Right Fiction podcast. And you can find all about our this episode and all the other ones on our website at www.rightfiction.com. Please come and check us out. We got a lot of great information about there. And hopefully we'll have some live shows and stuff and some music up there soon for you guys to check out. So with that, we'll see you next week. Take care.
Right Fiction.